Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Everyone, and welcome back to Rule the Roost podcast. I'm your host Jack, and I'm joined as ever by Raj. How are you doing, Raj?
I'm fine, thank you very much. I'm a bit out of breath because I want to just come inside from playing in the garden, but I'm fine, thank you.
I like that, playing in the garden.
Made myself sound about like a toddler.
Yeah, a little tea party. Playing with Tonka trucks and all that in the sandpit.
Yeah, I never had a sandpit. But,
I've never had a sandpit either.
I think it's
a bit of an American thing, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I think there were one at nursery or something like that, but I'd never had one at home. I've always just, you know, football and cricket in the street type of thing and kicking rugby balls from one garden to the other and stuff like that.
Did you have one of those horrible neighbours that would, like, pop the balls and stuff?
Yeah, there was a rumour, actually, that the woman at the end of our road was a witch. But she
Every
was just
street
a,
had that rumour, didn't they, really?
Yeah, but the sad truth of it years later was the only reason she was a bit grumpy was that she was the victim of decades-old domestic abuse. So,
that's probably the story behind most alleged witches, isn't it? Really.
As an adult, and you suddenly realise why this woman was never wanting to really spend much time and be nice to you and things is because she was married to a horrible piece of work. But you don't know those things when you're a kid, and she offers to, you know, kick your ball away when it lands on a garden and stuff. But you live and you learn, don't you? So it's a nice way to get us started.
I was going to say, and speaking of horrible pieces of work, we're also joined by Seb. How are you doing, Seb?
I'm okay, thanks, mate.
Yeah, you're not really a horrible piece of work.
Well, thank you.
You're a mid-range piece of
work. Yeah, average. You know, yeah. Could do better, that kind of thing.
I can't remember if it was on the pod or just in a chat, but I did say there's a devil in you, though, Sebastian Sefbron. I do stand by that.
I think that was on the pod.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is.
We do air our dirty laundry on the pod most weeks, so.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Now, as a tenuous segue, you said the word dirty.
Yeah.
And something else that's often seen as being quite dirty is Stoke City Football
Club. Hey, great segue.
That's just off the cuff. I think I've got a.
You've been practicing in spare time, mate, with your
I've just got a career in, like, you know, irreverent kind of ad lib comedy. I think on the go, sort of. How was it? I'll tell you what. You went to the game, Seb. Tell us first of all about your experience. Give us some insight into, you know, take us from the train station. Anything you noticed about
you know
Bristol
what
the Temple
the thing is that we on the way up we were talking and you asked me to kind of document what was going on.
I knew you weren't going to.
Yeah, but this is the thing. I got off the train fully intending to do so, but I think the most revealing thing I can say is that there wasn't really anything to document. I mean, there was I got off the train. There's a nice Wedgwood statue in front of my hotel. Pretty nice Nando's in downtown Stoke, and.
What did you have in Nando's?
I just went with the grilled chicken in a wrap, medium spice, obviously, matcha peas, peri-peri.
Lemon and herb for definite.
Fuck off, lemon and herb, medium.
He's one of those when he takes a lass, he asks for the hot flag to be put in it, but it's really lemon and herb.
I've never taken anyone to Nando's. No, that's a solo eating venue. It was, you know, I mean, I don't know, you did warn me, Jack. I mean, it's a funny place, Stoke. And I mean, in terms of an away day, as an experience, it was brilliant because the game itself and the atmosphere and kind of being with our fans, it was brilliant. But everything around it was a little bit underwhelming. But yeah, I'm not in a rush to get back to Stoke, put it that way.
What was the experience aside for like obviously like the latent Danny Rose racism that they usually exhibit?
Well, this is the thing.
What was the atmosphere like?
Yeah, this is the thing, because I've never been to Stoke before, and I've always been led to believe that it's one of the best atmospheres in the Premier League. But I can't remember ever going to another team's ground and hearing less from them. They were completely dead. I mean, our support was brilliant. It was very much, you know how kind of in a lot of games you know, in amongst all the chanting and stuff, you usually have a lot of kind of patter and a lot of bitching and moaning about this player being picked and what that player's doing. It's interesting that sort of that stuff seems to have melted away from our fan base. There's just, I mean, it's certainly around me, there's just so much unity and just so much enthusiasm for our players. And even those that used to be kind of moaned about quite regularly and belittled, like your sort of Eric Lamellas. I mean, everyone seems to love Lamella now. And it's just, it's such a, I mean, if any other fan base heard this, it would be nauseating for them, I'm quite sure. But it's just such a, such a wonderful experience being in the Spurs crowd at the moment. Because it just, everything about it, like the way we played obviously was brilliant. It's one of the best Tottenham away performances I've seen in my lifetime. But it's just such a rewarding experience as well, because you leave the ground feeling 10 foot tall. And that's about the team, of course, but it's and where they are in the league. But it's also about the amount of support that our crowd gives them. I mean, there was obviously the kind of the forgotten moment of that game was Dele Alli's miss when he went around Shea Given. And I mean, it was ridiculous. And his name was never sung louder than it was immediately after that. And I remember thinking, that's what this fan base is at the moment. It's just a really special place. And you leave and you just, it's just, yeah, it's hard to describe, because I'm sure if you're a Chelsea or a Man United fan, that's kind of your default position when you leave a game. You know, you've battered some, you know, Stoke or whoever. But for us, it's quite unusual. And God, I'm glad I went. It was, yeah. I mean, I was speaking to you guys a couple of days before, because I actually had a writing deadline that night, and it was a little bit tricky, and I kind of you two both said, "Oh, fuck off, go," you know. And I'm so glad I did. I mean, I haven't been to nearly enough away games in my time, and yeah, it was just something I'll never forget. Definitely.
It's funny because the narrative prior to the game was, you know, it's a Monday night away at Stoke. Yeah, Stoke might not have anything to play for, but it's still going to be a tricky game for Tottenham. This is the type of fixture they usually slip up in, so on and so forth, which I think in a lot of ways was pretty dismissive of Stoke and the fact they have evolved as a team now past the sort of, you know, cavemen they were of a few years back. But immediately after that, especially in some circles, I mean, there has been most of all an outpouring of praise for Tottenham and Pochettino and the progress that we are starting to make. And actually, surprisingly, it seems to be that the tide is turning towards a more pro-Tottenham sentiment as opposed to Leicester's
fairy
tale.
But does that annoy you, Jack? I mean, I've the last couple of days, I've read an awful lot about, you know, how great we are and, you know, this player being good. And you know what? Harry Kane is quite a good player. I just think, fuck's sake, it's April. And we didn't start the season like we're playing now. We've been playing like this for about 3 or 4 months. Maybe, you know, Stoke was one of the high points, of course, but like some of the things I've read, I just think, have you watched more than an hour of our games all year? I mean, it's just sort of, and I'm not just saying this because of the obvious, but Leicester, yeah, great. But sort of to treat us like a kind of, oh, well, they're kind of like a big bad Chelsea or Man City chasing them. Fuck off. I mean, you know, I've waited all my life to see, to feel as I did when I left the Britannia Stadium on Monday, just to feel like that about a Tottenham performance. And not just in a kind of, oh, well, we've beaten Arsenal, it's a one-off game, but just to feel good about where you're going as a supporter and where you're going as a team. And just to think, this is a group of players that I genuinely love. And to hear it kind of, yeah, but it's no Jamie Vardy. I mean, it's just, you know, it's such superficial bollocks. I respect what Leicester are doing, and I like Claudio Ranieri. I really admire what he's been able to do, and I think there are some terrific players in that team. But to treat us as a kind of, oh, well, they're, you know, that they're the fairy tale spoilers, just whatever.
I do think, like, one of my thoughts on that is that there's always been, I mean, we haven't won the league for, what, 50-odd years now, and you can't shy away from that. But at the same time, there's always been more of a sense that Spurs had it within them to do this. It's always been there. I mean, it's been there through the 70s, it's been there through the 80s. Okay, the 90s and the early 2000s are a complete write-off. But Spurs have always been a side that people have often billed as a sleeping giant, you know, if we're going to go on a cliche bingo. So I think that's potentially played into it that, you know, oh, well, of course Spurs are going to be able to do this. And I mean, I'm actually quite happy about the fact in some respects that us doing this isn't billed as like a fairy tale. Because I think for a team like Leicester, you probably do. I mean, as much as I said, I have never thought I'd see Spurs win the Premier League in my lifetime. You know, I think 9/10 of, you know, your most sane, rational people would never have ever bet on seeing Leicester City, barring a, you know, a Manchester City-style buyout, ever really competing at the top of the table. Whereas with Spurs, there's always been a sense that, oh, well, you know, they play their cards right, they might be able to do it. But I definitely agree. I definitely agree that there's suddenly this, oh, hang on, actually, maybe Harry Kane's quite good because he's scoring all these goals. And maybe actually, you know, Christian Eriksen, Dele Alli, Eric Dier, Toby Alderweireld, these lads, it's not just Spurs fans getting ahead of steam. Like these players are actually really good. And when Tottenham fans have been telling us all season, they have this tight-knit, you know, functioning team, that they're not just kind of, you know, being typical Tottenham fans. And I think that's what's more galling. It's almost like the Spurs fans and a lot of the, not hyperbole, but a lot of the noise that's been created around Tottenham has mostly been by Tottenham fans. And because we are quite prone to doing that, and we have been in the past, I think that's been treated with a bit of contempt by some sides, that some people are kind of like, oh, it's just Tottenham fans making noise again. And the more and more teams are actually playing, more and more people are waking up to the fact that actually, you know what, having seen these guys play firsthand, they're actually fucking brilliant. And you're seeing that a lot on social as well now. You're seeing several fan bases now saying Spurs are the best team. This Spurs team are the best team I've seen play at our ground in, what, 10 years or so. And it's crazy. It's, you know, it's crazy being put in that bracket with a, you know, a 2000s Arsenal, Man United. We gotta win this league. We have to. What the fuck are Leicester?
Mate, you know,
what are they? Let's stop pretending. Like, you know, they're
with that thing about, like, you know, being able to imagine Spurs potentially winning a league through, you know, at some point maybe in the last, you know, 10 years. I think, like, if you were to consider what our primary weakness was, which is an inability to win when we absolutely have to, I think you're kind of halfway to, like, the outsiders are halfway to understanding, like, what a win like Monday night felt, how a win like Monday night felt. Because Tottenham are the kind of club whereby, you know, when Leicester dropped their points on Sunday, you thought, well, Tottenham have been given an olive branch, but they're the kind of team who are going to fumble it.
Yeah.
And you think, yeah, I can see that. But then to come out like that, and it wasn't that it was just clinical. It was a fuck off and get out of the way. It was a bulldozing. Like, just Stoke were made to look absolutely shit, and they're not. They are, like we said, that they're a really talented team, and certainly, like, you know, that their four forwards are excellent on their day and when they combine.
I almost feel as if, like, the years leading up to this, and I'm talking about, like, if you look at our journey from when we had our first big fall off. So in the 80s, we were still obviously a very good team. When we could have won the league a couple of times, and we're probably a similar team to what we are now. I'm not saying it's directly similar, but in terms of stature and size. So it feels like we are now, you know, we're always around the kind of like top five places. We're knocking on the door of Champions League or whatever you want to call it, or at least challenging with the bigger teams. And it feels like, you know, normality really for Tottenham has been resumed. But it's almost like the past kind of two decades, the malaise that we've had, is it's created this perfect storm for a manager like Pochettino to come in. A manager like Pochettino, whose ethos is very much about, you know, absorb it, absorb all this like this pressure, this negativity, and use that as fuel. And you can see that echoed through like the comments from players like, you know, Vertonghen, Alderweireld have come out, but more notably like Harry Kane, Dele Alli in the past couple of weeks have said, you know, all the doubt, all the criticism, Eriksen said something to this effect as well. This Spurs are going to fuck it up. This inevitably Spurs aren't going to do it. It's almost like Pochettino's, he relishes that. He's like, eat this, lads. This is what people think of you. Slap it back in their faces. Do it. And I think that's why I've got just such a buzz about this season now, because it is that perfect storm, and it just feels like we're primed to just do it now. At that point, like you're saying, so at that point where usually, you know,
you fuck it.
Leicester have dropped points, and this is when Spurs fuck it up and everyone
someone
has
gets
a
red card, we have a dodgy penalty.
Yeah, and Arsenal overtake us and blah, 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 yeah. blah. The usual shit happens. No, we're not having it, you know? Man United had that first good half against us, and people started thinking, is this the Tottenham wobble? We came out after
I was one of them. You remember what I said.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's so programmed into us to feel that way. Because like I say, we've had 20 years of watching Spurs do that continually. And it's hard to escape from that.
But it's hard. No, it's the most wonderful catharsis, Jack. I mean, I to get back to the station afterwards, to get back to the hotel opposite the station afterwards, I kind of snuck on to one of the... You know,
was that a train station, Seb? What was it like?
Well, I sent you the pictures. It's very nice from the outside. It's got nice architecture. It's kind of a sort of a Baroque thing going on there. It's lovely. But I snuck onto the shuttle there was some space on the shuttle for the charter train back to London. And I was sitting in there and I was by myself by that point, and I was listening to the kind of the conversations around me, and God, it was just so much enthusiasm. Like usually when you're in that scenario, you're listening to Spurs fans moan, and it's fucking this, we should have fucking done that. You know, that kind of chat. And you just think, that is the life of a Tottenham fan after a big game. And there was just so much enthusiasm. Like people were bubbling with it. It was an amazing place to be. It was...
It only takes a title race for the Tottenham fan base to fucking cheer up, eh?
Well, it's... So, Raj, sorry, you're still there. I mean, I've been talking far too much.
I was going to say, Raj, I mean, people will say, like, it was only Stoke, they're on the beach, they're this or that, but I still think we do have to consider the fact that Stoke are, on their day, they can be a handful, and they still have some players there capable of causing us an upset, but there was such a determination about Spurs. Would you, like, buy into this idea that it was one of our most complete performances of the season, or do you think we still need to have that... like clarity that it was just Stoke at all?
I think it's the start that put them off, to be honest. Because if we started tentatively and we didn't sort of impress ourselves upon them from the first whistle, then it might have given them a bit of a whiff and, you know, a bit of encouragement that they may have some joy against us. And they have got the players, when motivated, that can hurt you. There's, you know, I think there's that statistic that they've got the most former Champions League winners in their squad out of everyone else in the Premier League, so they're not short of talent. Even though Charlie Adam and Glenn Whelan still play for them, but the fact of the matter is that we didn't give them a sniff at all. And as you say, there is the fact that they are on the beach, and that does play into it somewhat. I mean, the psychology of sport is something that we don't fully understand, but things like that seem quite easy, and you know, it's not adding two and two together and getting five, but it happens far too often in the league season for it not to affect them. If you've got nothing to play for, if you've got nothing to do, then you're obviously not going to be as motivated. But the fact that we sort of, from first kick to last, just said that, no, this is our game, you're making up the numbers, was very impressive. That there wasn't any chance of them getting into it. There wasn't any fear. You could almost sense, you know, the fact that Harry Kane's posting pictures of lions on the prowl on Instagram.
I don't know. I haven't yet seen it back on TV, but like, after we scored the second, Stoke were on the beach. They were done and they quit basically. But for that first hour, they really worked us. I thought Stoke, I mean, that they didn't create anything is really down to us. I remember I read some people saying, well, you know, he's walkover. I disagree. Stoke Stoke, without doing anything particularly dangerous in the final third, played pretty well for most of the first half. And like a couple of their players, Mbula was excellent. He's a very, very good player, I think. But I just think it's sort of, I just resent it a little bit. I just think, no, we shut them out of that game. There was no lack of application from Stoke in my mind. I don't know how that looked on TV. Maybe different, but it just, yeah.
You know what it's like? It's, you know when you watch a rugby game and somebody takes that first run in and you can almost tell if there's one team that wants it more than the other and there's a bit more impetus in it. The fact that we did just dictate the pace of it, there wasn't anything that allowed them to get into it. I mean, at the end of the day, no footballer, I don't think, ever goes into a match intending to lose. I don't think Stoke fans will have wanted to see their team lose or anything like that. But the fact of the matter is that sort of, if you don't give them anything to take heart from, then they are just going to have to step aside. It is one of those things where even subconsciously you just sort of go, you know, this isn't the one. It's like, you know, when you watch a boxing fight or you watch a boxing fight, what else are they fucking going to do? It's not a boxing dance, is it?
They hug a lot. Yeah. So, you know,
like Anthony Joshua's fights when he gets put in against a pub fighter and they take one of his first jabs and you sort of see it in their eyes after that. They're just waiting, they really praying for the canvas. That's what happened to Stoke. They were waiting to get laid out and that's what happened.
It's very interesting that you bring up Anthony Joshua there, because I was thinking the other day, like in this title race, Spurs basically are Anthony Joshua and Leicester are your kind of Tyson Fury.
You know, that works on a few levels, doesn't it?
Well, exactly, yeah. The problematic, like, outside story that links them together aside.
Which we must not talk about.
Well, it's Fury. Well, Gary Lineker will be angry if you do.
Oliver Holt, like, you know, other people that sort of,
But it's just like we're that toned, hungry, young, ruthlessly efficient side that's supremely confident but not arrogant. Whereas
there is a little bit of arrogence to us, Jack, and I don't know if
there is, mate. When I think of arrogance, and I know
there's a hint of bastard to us, definitely.
Yeah, okay,
there's some menace in our team, and maybe arrogance is absolutely the wrong word, actually, in retrospect. But
there's a little thing. I don't know. It's just like we're not going to be pitching up. We're not going to be told we're the young team and we shouldn't win anything. Like, you know, Eric Dyer going down the Man City players' escalator, things like that. You know. Eric Dyer telling Yaya Toure to fuck off in the tunnel, or who, you know, it's just like it's that kind of like, yeah, it doesn't matter. You know, I don't care who you are. We're Tottenham Hotspur, and we've just beaten you, so fuck off. You know, we're here now. You've had your day in the sun. That's what I love about it.
There was a really interesting moment actually when obviously Charlie Adam came on, and without meaning to be conspiratorial about it, Charlie Adam was sent on to hurt somebody. Quite obviously, and I think it was Lamella who escaped down the flank, and Charlie Adam basically just rugby tackled him, and Adam obviously got dog's abuse off our fans, quite rightly, because he's a bastard. But he just looked so out of place playing against a team like us. Like, whereas in the past he's been quite effective. I mean, he had a pretty good game for us against Blackpool, and not so much against Liverpool when we played for Liverpool, obviously. But he's been okay. He's had his red cards, but he's been of an influence. And it was satisfying because he quite obviously didn't belong on a pitch with some of our players. It's just like, mate, you know, have you won a competition to be here? You know, just a sort of fat little toothless prick running around trying to kick players. And you just thought, mate, get down the tunnel and fuck off.
You know what it is? There's absolutely just... I don't know. Like I said to you,
absolutely hate him.
At full time, I was close to having like tears in my eyes just watching that Tottenham performance and watching that group of players and the way they've performed. And it's all season long we've been good. You know, we've been very, very good at points. But now we have that swagger of champions. This is why I refuse to believe that a 5-point gap is insurmountable. like seeing that Leicester performance the other day, and I know we said we aren't going to talk about Leicester's karma, but I don't care, mate. Like watching them play the other day, like their arseholes are going, and they are. They're a mess in the box. They are just so stunted. They were crap against Sunderland, who are one of the worst teams in the league. And they needed Vardy to be the difference for them. They did, and they needed Vardy again to be the difference, mainly against West Ham, who were far superior to them in that match. Like, across the pitch, West Ham were far superior to them.
Yeah, I thought West Ham played pretty well in that game, actually. I have to say, I thought they were pretty unlucky.
And West Ham weren't even playing at their best either, that's the thing.
Felt pretty dirty celebrating a West Ham goal like a Spurs goal.
It was a Spurs goal, man. It was a Spurs goal. That's the way I reconciled it. But just seeing, like, I mean, when you look at us defensively, everything is just, it's spot on. Like, we're like one of these, like, we're like a German car at the back, you know. Everything is in its place and everything works like clockwork. And it's perfect. You've got the pressing and the intensity of the fullbacks. You've got the two lads at the back. You've got Dyer sort of screening them, dropping back, filling in. And it works telepathically on that front. And I know it is telepathically, whatever. I don't care if it's cliche. But it's the same up the top as well. It feels like against United and against this, we've knocked on the door. But now, like the fluid front four that we've spoken about in the past, it's in full flow now. All of those lads, so
some of the
Ali,
football,
Eriksen, Kane, Lamella. Yeah. The way they are playing, like you can't really say, oh, he's in, you know, he's playing at the left, he's playing this, he's playing, like, they are just like, teams can't cope with it, they can't handle it, because every time we attacked, it looked like they were playing, like one of those lads was making a run from a different position, and they're always working for one another, just so seamlessly. It's so incredible to watch, and I think this is one of the things that is exception about Pochettino, and this exception about the football we're playing at the moment, is that it's not kind of, you know, there are similarities between AVB and what AVB was trying to produce for us, but there is, and you know, you're not going to let me say it, but there is a shade of Redknapp kind of caution to the wind about it as well. It is like it's the two conflated. You've got that English, you know, no old bard, let's just go out and have a run around, but with a very technical structure into it. And that's why it seems to work. I love Pochettino so much.
I was thinking, actually, and that there are holes in this theory, but it's a little bit like, it's the love child of the two of the Redknapp and the Villas-Boas philosophy, taking all the best aspects of it. Like, I would say that our attacking play is far more complex than it was. I mean, because with Redknapp, it was very much a kind of width, you know, speed of pass, Modric looking for holes down the channels, that kind of football. Whereas now, some of the football, you know, that noise you make, like when you've seen a good bit of play, like I was making that quite regularly during the game, which is quite rare for me. I'm not really that kind of fan, but at times you just think, Jesus, we're good. Like some of the sort of, it was like watching a team training, really, because you know, when you watch a team train, there's sort of no inhibition, there's no pressure, and they just, you know, you see how good the players are. And it was like that, just again in real time against the proper opposition. And some of our exits were very good, and just some of the speed with which we moved from our third into the attacking third was at times unbelievable. Just so slick. God, it's just great. Love it.
We're going to fucking do it, lads.
Yeah, I think we're going to win the league.
We're going to do it. Let's look ahead, though, to West Brom. Because how it would be awful now if Leicester did drop points to Swansea. Because Vardy's missing. I don't think it's that unrealistic that they may or may not, but we're not here to talk about Leicester City, so let's just ignore them for now. West Brom, again, is one of those classic Tottenham fixtures. We've seen it in the past couple of years. We've lost at home to West Brom, where this is again another banana skin. It's a Monday night fixture. We're the only ones playing, I believe. There's every chance that the Tottenham of old would slip up in this, but as we've said already, you don't get the feeling that we will. Is there anything about West Brom that's stood out for you in this season at all, Raj or Seb, that makes you think they could pose anything of a threat to us at all?
Raj?
You know, they're one of those sides that are, you know, unpredictable in what they do. Sometimes they come out and actually play football. Sometimes if he picks Rondon and Berahino, and they've got Sessegnon as well over times, they're typical Tony Pulis, and they start with six central defenders. So it's, you know, it's hard to gauge. You'd imagine Pulis would throw caution to the wind coming to White Hart Lane and what we've seen him before. He's not actually got a terrible record against us, which would be, you know, somewhat worrying. But he's, we'll see. They're another one that's, you know, in a similar position to Stoke, a few places back, albeit, but they've not really got any relegation threat anymore. They've not got any European aspirations. They're probably going to, you know, there's not really much for them to really play for. Again, if we assert ourselves in a similar manner that we did against Stoke, I can't see them wanting to do too much against us. It's a strange one, really. I mean, like we said a few weeks ago when you were like, oh, and we went through and we went, this is an hard game. It's when you're in this position, they're all hard games because you're not just playing against teams, but you're playing against expectation. And yeah, and that's often, you know, often more troubling than the actual people on the park against you. Like I said, if you give anyone in this league a sniff that there's a chink in your armour, then they'll have a go. And you've just got to stand up to them and make sure that they don't ever see a sign of weakness. And that's the only way to proceed from here on. And you've got to do that against everyone. With four games left, it's just about never... You can't take your foot off the pedal whatsoever. I don't know how to articulate it because it's obviously never a position we've been in before. It's never something I've ever had to discuss before. It's a completely different...
It's bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a completely different mindset, not just for the players and the fact that they're going for something that is the biggest domestic honour in the country compared to, you know, a place in the table that we usually are. And as a fan as well, it's a mindset I've never had to adopt before in my life whatsoever, especially not with Tottenham. So it's a very strange thing. It's almost as if you're battling yourself as much as anyone else. As cliched as that may sound, it's a very strange situation to be in. Like I say, we've got more than enough talent and the ability and everything to do that. Will with, you know, a few goals to spare against West Brom, especially if we score early and don't give them a sniff. But then again, they've got players that can hurt us, and a manager that seems to enjoy upsetting parties and things. And he's, you know, he was in charge of Crystal Palace when they took Liverpool to 3-3, was it? When the wheels came off their title challenge. But we've still got that. We've still got the added bonus of being the ones chasing rather than the ones, you know, avoiding not to be caught. So I think that gives us a bit more impetus. Had we been top at this point, I think there would have been a more tangible feeling that there's a lot more for us to lose. And the fact that we're almost timing it just right. And, you know, it's like when they always call league, don't they, a marathon. It's when you see somebody kick too early and then there's someone wheeling them in the last couple of miles. That might just be the way it works out, but we'll have to see. I mean, it's every time we've sat here and predicted something, it's gone the opposite way to what we've imagined it to. So I'm not a religious man in the slightest. I don't believe there's anything like that, but I'm very superstitious. Which, you know, probably to a fault. And the fact that we didn't discuss Leicester last week and what happened to them happened, I don't want to cast too much doubt on them or speak too much doubt, you know, speak too much about them anymore. But it's just about, you know, if we win everything we have left, then what happens at the end of the season can happen because we've done as best as we can. I mean, I think I read earlier today that sort of 72 points, our record points tally that we got with AVB, with Bale in the side, it's likely to give you second place this season in the Premier League. So that just shows you how strange this year has turned around. So I think I'm perhaps more uncomfortable than those players are. The fact that you hear Harry Kane and Dele Alli and the rest of them sort of, you know, with broad smiles and talking about them itching to be on the park and wanting to chase this down, that I think they're in a better mind frame than perhaps we are. But you'd hope that'd be the case, wouldn't you?
You know, I mean, I think one of you guys has mentioned this before, but I think it helps that three of our starting 11 have won league titles before at Ajax. And the others, I think it actually plays into our hands that we've never been in this situation. So I think maybe if our players have been in this scenario before and failed, I think that probably enters your mind. At the moment, I mean, the perception I get anyway, and this is obviously just a guess, but it just seems as if we're playing on adrenaline. The players just really, I mean, I caught a little bit of Harry Kane's post-match interview yesterday, and he was just talking about how much he was looking forward to playing. Because obviously we talked quite a lot about sort of the pros and cons of having to play last each weekend, and you know, we're going to have to do that for another 2 weeks. And he just said, well, you know, it's another 24 hours where I was sort of kicking my heels. I just couldn't wait to get on the pitch. And that's exactly what you want to hear a player say. Rather than the kind of, oh, shit, we've just got to get through this, it's a kind of, no, we just want to get on the pitch and do it. And I really like that. And that fills me with confidence, because that seems to be sort of echoed throughout the side. It's full of players that want to play and just want to win. And it's just not an ounce of fear, though, which is really weird for us to get used to, of course. But, I mean, obviously, a lot of these players aren't in any way associated with our past.
There's absolutely no reason for me why we can't start next season playing this way. Barring, touch wood, it doesn't happen, barring like an injury in Euro 2016 or something like that to one of our key figures, if a team like Leicester can continue in the form, yeah, because they were in a very rich vein of form at the end of last season, and they've obviously carried that through into this year, there's no reason why we can't. And I still, even if we don't pull it off this year, I still will not buy into the idea that this is our big chance fucked. This is something very different. This is a solid foundation we have here.
I think next season may get off to a slower start for everyone, just because it tends to, the season after a tournament, no matter who you are, just because you've had less time in pre-season and everyone sort of, it messes with their preparation a bit more than they'd want it to. But yeah, there's no reason they can't click into gear as long as everyone isn't injured. It'll just be perhaps the start of the season will be a bit more about the depth of the squad and getting some sort of newer players in, because there's the majority of our squad that's going to be there, to be honest. The amount of England internationals we have and Belgians and what have you, they'll all be away. And then they're not small members of our squad. They tend to be key members. So it's going to be... the majority of our first 11 is going to be out there, essentially. So we're going to have to sort of play it by ear at the start of next year. But that's just me getting me excuses in early, I think.
Well, you know, I wonder if this is a fact. I don't believe for a second that Leicester will reproduce what they've done this season ever again. And I think maybe there's a little hint in that dressing room of a kind of, this is our one chance and we can't fuck it. Whereas, like you guys say, in our squad, and quite rightly, there seems to be the sense of we're building something a bit more permanent. And okay, a lot of other teams, a lot of the sort of traditionally strong teams will improve next year, but there's no reason why we can't challenge again next year. And I think that from a sort of an easing of pressure standpoint, I think that really helps. I mean, that's a complete guess, but it seems quite logical.
I think my only concern with this kind of thing is that, you know, Champions League is secured with 3 more points now. We need 3 more points, and Champions League is a mathematical certainty for Spurs now. So I think you can pretty much bet your bottom dollar on the fact we'll be in the Champions League next year, which is a godsend. The only fear for me still is one of our players' heads getting turned. Is someone like Kane having that kind of the offer of someone like Bayern, who have been linked to him again this week, having someone like Bayern come in, and I know we really want to believe that, and not want to believe, like Kane is, he obviously bleeds Lily White and whatever else shitty adages you want to throw at it, but you know, he's obviously very much a Tottenham boy and he loves what's happening at the club. But, you know, as a professional, look at someone like Sandro. You know, Sandro had the potential to go on and play for one of the top teams in Europe. One injury and he's fucked and that's it. And now he's playing at West Brom, incidentally. And I think a professional is always going to want to play at the top of the game. And if there is a concrete offer that comes in for someone like Kane, I'm still not convinced that they would unequivocally turn it down. If there was that 60 mil floated or... Well, we wouldn't accept that. Okay, forget however much they offer us. But were there a bid that was too good for Spurs to turn down for someone like Kane, for someone like Ali, even someone like Eriksen, who has actually... really had a phenomenal season. Like, yeah. There's so many players that have had such good seasons, and they're probably not getting the plaudits they deserve, not through any kind of perceived sense of injustice, but just from the fact that there are too many success stories.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
To talk about in Tottenham's team this year, there are far too many. Eric Dyer, Danny Rose, Toby Alderweireld, even Jan Vertonghen, Kyle Walker's improved. Nearly every single one of the players in our team this season has improved considerably. So much so that if it were any other season, there would be articles, think pieces, Twitter adulation for, I would comfortably say, for any one of the players in this team were they to be, you know, stepping their game up on a solo basis, as they all have done this season. But I still do worry that, like, you know, I guess, again, maybe that's an inbuilt fear, but that we do still have a bit of a house of cards situation, perhaps.
Chad, do you not think, I mean, history tells me you're right.
Pochettino's my biggest worry, that's the thing.
He is, but I don't worry about those things now or in the summer because, well, I mean, it seems fairly certain now if Man United lose tonight, then we're a Champions League team again. Do you not think that sort of, I understand there are still bigger clubs than us on the continent, but if you've built something and you've, okay, say we were to finish second, that the temptation just to say, well, you know, it's ridiculous in such a short space of time. He's moving towards a kind of iconic status at the club, which is, it's premature and he's not quite there yet. He was to win the league, and if any of those players to win the league, they become Tottenham immortals. And the chance to say, I'm going to be the guy that takes this club back to where they once were, that's a huge incentive. And also, you know, from a I understand that the draw of Real Madrid or Bayern Munich, of course I do, but, you know, from a financial standpoint, you know, the Premier League's broadcasting contracts allow us to maybe not match that sort of financial muscle, but come close to it. And, you know, even things like the stadium transition, whereas, you know, we had that kind of, originally had that sort of awkward intermediary period between White Hart Lane and the new ground. Now it looks like we're going to be playing at Wembley. I mean, it's a pretty great place to be, Tottenham.
It is, I mean...
At the moment, I agree with you. I'm trying to talk myself out of many of the things that you've said.
No, of course, no. But it's a salient point. I mean, all I would say is that I think that, and I guess maybe this is... whatever Lily White specs or again, whatever you want to put it as, I still think as much as you can apply that to us, you know, Pochettino is, and I am mainly talking about Pochettino. He's an ambitious guy.
Yeah.
He obviously very much wants to be regarded as someone like, you know, Pep Guardiola, you know, in that kind of bracket, you know, I hate to be so like I love Spurs. I love what's going on. Don't get me wrong. Please don't take this as me being negative and dismissive of what we're building and what we're going towards. But at the same time, there's still that element of, you know, if you win the league with Spurs, it's great, but you're a great underdog story. You win the league, you take someone like Manchester United from the shambles and the calamity that they've been since Ferguson left, you steady that ship and you make Man United again, you're a legend, you know. Yeah. And you can be elevated to that world elite type bracket, as opposed to just being the guy that completed a good underdog story with Tottenham.
You know,
it's like you can get a team like United, Punchkin, if he was given assurances that he can, you know, because it's been said before, like Charlton's come out and said there is an appetite, there's a recognition at United now that they've let their academy fall by the wayside. The infrastructure of the club has been too controlled by money men, so on and so forth. And they're starting to realise how that's backfired. And there is a real appetite now to actually take a step back and build something proper at United again. And I can only see someone like Pochettino, really, aside from maybe Simeone, someone like Pochettino being an ideal candidate for them. And if he is given that, say, like, not even a blank checkbook, he's just given a blank canvas to be like, look, this is Manchester United, this is yours, do what you've done for Spurs here, and you can go down in history as, I don't know, that is my fear. That's, yeah, you know,
it's entirely rational, though, entirely rational even, but the thing is, it's one thing for Bobby Charlton to say that. It's another for Ed Woodward to show that he actually believes it. Ed Woodward.
Well, you've got a noodle company offering you £1 billion.
Yeah,
pounds,
mate,
you know?
I mean, Ed Woodward wants he wants to run a TV program, not a football
club. Fair.
And like, until he grows out of the kind of Neymar, Bale, Ronaldo bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
Then the Pochettino being ambitious thing, I think I agree, but I mean, I think it's a little overstated because, yes, he left Southampton early, but I think he left Southampton early partly because they allowed Nicola Cortesi to leave the club. Because Cortesi was his guy. Yeah. He brought him there from Espanyol. And I think, I don't know, I'd like to think that we'd still have been able to attract him. But I think...
were fucking selling his best players.
They were selling all of his players. Well. And you just thought, well, if I was Pochettino in that system, in that situation, I'd have gone from thinking, you know, well, maybe I can do something Tottenham like with Southampton, to fuck this. You know, and I completely understand that. I'd have made the same decision, even if I'd had no allegiance. But yeah, Man United, I mean, if Man United were ever to become... I just think if Man United becoming what Man United were is at least 5 years away. Because, the kind of infrastructural... Think how long it took us to redevelop our training ground, to put all the pieces in place, to make all the mistakes we needed to make to kind of get to the formula that we're now profiting from. I just... Like, you got to be absolutely out of your mind to go to Man United in the next 18 months, at least. And I love being able to say that.
I think
I love
as well,
it. We now have no geographic rivalry with them, but it's just so great. It's just see them flounder.
I think a sign of how far we've come is that I don't think in my entire lifetime I've ever seen any sound bites about Tottenham and Man United other than they thumped us again and Ferguson's lads is Tottenham. That's about it. But now, when you have the manager and you have fans of Manchester United now bitching at Spurs, talking about what a small club we are and how we wish we were their size, and that it's almost like we've got them rattled now, that they actually deem us worthy of having a pop at. You know, we were insignificant to them before, much like many teams are in the league to us, and it's a shitty mentality to have. But
I don't think it's unfair, man. Like, I mean, they get as angry as they like, but they're not relevant to us at the moment. They will be next season. It's like Arsenal. I was on the train back, and I saw somebody say,
"Careful."
No, but I'm not going to say that. Arsenal aren't irrelevant because Arsenal are still in touch. But I saw somebody tweet out, someone I hadn't heard of before, someone tweet out something along the lines of, oh, if Tottenham win the league, it will really just be about them finishing above Arsenal, which we all know is bollocks. And I remember thinking, I don't think I've ever been to a Tottenham game where Arsenal have been referenced less by chanting. I mean, at the end, right at the end, when the game was won, and you know, there was a little bit of that, and the sort of the Wenger Saville thing appeared, which I really don't like that. I don't sing that song at all. No, I just not on at all.
It's not my sense.
No, neither mine.
Churlish.
It's funny because it's not. We don't think like that. We don't. You know, Man United are not relevant, and it's not about us finishing above Arsenal because. I mean, okay, well, I'm not going to count my chickens, but it's just we're looking up. We're looking above that kind of stuff now. And I think that's sort of symptomatic of how much we've grown.
Yes and no. I think it's partly because we're still in contention for the league title, which is crazy to say.
Of course, so we actually, of course. We have if we weren't, we'd be talking about, you know, mind the gap and all that stuff. Yeah, absolutely. I think
come the end of the season, do we finish second and they finish fourth? It will be full flow. Let's all laugh at Arsenal, you know, and rightly fucking so as well for the years of shit we've had to endure from them. Like, I don't care about small club, cup final, this and that. I could not give a shit. They are going to get it from Tottenham.
Mate, they've got a day named after the point in the season when...
Exactly. That is the selfies, so, the celebrating at the lane, everything. Years of it.
Yeah, and I've already heard a little bit of kind of... Yeah, I'm not really bothered about finishing beneath Spurs. I just want to make sure. I just want Leicester to win the title. Well, if you think like that, you're not really an Arsenal fan, because that's what the rivalry is. It's like when we played them in the League Cup, and there were people going, "Oh no, we should throw this game for City on Sunday or whenever that game actually was." You're thinking, that's not what the North London Derby is. That's not, you know, you can't, yeah. Nothing we haven't said before.
They say they don't really care about Spurs, but they all seem to have pretty strong opinions when Jack Wilshere starts up his chants on.
Yeah, mate. When they win the FA Cup, and you know, let's not do that. Fuck that. No, I don't care about them really. I mean, we'll gloat as and when the time is appropriate, of course. But for the moment, we've got bigger fish to fry.
Let's do a couple of questions before we close.
God, I'm angry this week, aren't I?
Yeah, it's angry. It's good. It's passionate.
I just
That's what. It's enthusiasm. Potts has given us.
It's enthusiasm, it's not anger. I'm just fucking loving it.
I tell you what. For all his like, I save my passion for the bedroom. He's fucking. He's not at the moment. I tell you.
I've
so
never
good
ever
seeing
said
him.
I save my passion for the bedroom.
No, Pochettino, not you. Like that's his. Oh, right. You know, he always says, "As I save my passion for the bedroom." Past few games, like especially against Stoke, slapping the turf. He's really getting into it. Love it. I love seeing that from him. The boss, El Jefe, El Grande Jefe. Let's have a look. At Spurs and the Blood asks us, do you think we'll be as good next year with the likes of City, Chelsea, Paul and United strengthening? I think like Liverpool will be more of a threat, but I think City, Chelsea and United in particular, they've got more to fix than just a summer of spending a bit of money will. I think we'll still be up there. I said that earlier. Don't know about you two, but
yeah.
I don't know. The league works in mysterious ways, doesn't it?
This is true. Leicester City might win it this year. So fuck knows.
I didn't mean that necessarily, but
yeah.
You know, people can get a roll on that you don't expect them to, and players can suddenly come back from, you know, the brink that you know, Eden Hazard's done absolutely nothing this season whatsoever. He's been absolutely awful, but that doesn't mean if a manager that comes in reinvigorates him, actually, you know, makes him want to play football again, that doesn't mean that he can't have a season like he did 2 years ago. And there's all sorts. There's potential in those clubs. There always is, because they've got bottomless pits of money and things to do with, and there's always a quick fix to be made. I mean, if you look at Chelsea's history since Roman Abramovich came in, it defies logic, because they flip-flop with managers and you know, identities so often, but they've consistently won things because of the amount of investment, and I don't think that's likely to change. I mean, Guardiola as well is not a man you sort of count out. I know that Manchester City do look fairly abysmal, but they have some of the best individual talents in the league, and you know, one or two more pieces, one or two more 50-60 million pound transfers, and you're looking at another super team. It's there's there's a lot to be said for how well we've played, and where we are right now is not an artificial position, because we have been the best side in the league this season. The statistics of everything show you that much. I mean, if anyone's in a false position, and I don't mean that in a snide way, it goes back to what I said about the league being unpredictable. It's Leicester, because of how it just doesn't add up that they're there whatsoever. But it's, you know, I don't want to go out and write those clubs off before they've done anything, you never know. I think you've just got to sort of measure yourself against yourself, really. And if we come out next season, we play a similar style of football, and we challenge those clubs, and we you know, I don't want to say keep on their tail, but we're just as competitive. It'll come down to how well they play against other teams. Essentially, you can't always guarantee that they're going to be dropping points to Newcastle away or anything like that, because it's, as I say, it works in mysterious ways. You just don't know how it's going to go. That statistic that I said earlier about the fact that, you know, that 72 point season under AVB would have given us second place this year, and it gave us what, fifth that year, shows you just how it can swing depending on how the general feeling across the league is. The shit teams in our league might get even shitter, or they may get better, and that may swing it off even further.
West Ham might be up there, you know, for all we know.
Exactly, with you know, the fact that they're stadium. Paying £2.50 a week or something that they're paying for it is, yeah. You know, don't buy their own corner flags. That's a travesty, but that's an argument for another day.
Quite right.
It's an absolute heist, but
I'd say they're going for Zlatan this summer, but they've got Andy Carroll, haven't they?
Andy Carroll's just scored again. It's Watford.
I mean, like I say, I'm not worried about them, because I'm very happy with where my club is. But there's at the same time, I don't want to be flippant about sort of their financial power and muscle, and the fact that they can just, you know,
no, that's a good shot.
You know, yeah. Lick their thumb and roll out a few extra 20s and get in the people they need to, because that's the way it works in this sport these days. If we crack on, you know, buying teenagers for £5 million and turning them into England internationals in 3 months, then I'll be right as rain.
I wouldn't say no to Gareth Bale, though. I still wouldn't.
Oh, my old man said that the other day. He says, "How much do we have to pay to get Gareth Bale back in the summer?" And I think me and you theorised about this once in a text, didn't we, Jack?
Prefer Modric.
Yeah, obviously we'd prefer Modric, but
I don't know if I would. I don't know if I would now. I don't.
I think I just like the principle of taking a player off Real Madrid. I would find that very satisfying.
I guess so. Yeah.
But with Bale, I think.
I wonder if he's more realistic in a way.
With Bale, I think the moving into the new stadium and everything could be that the opportunity in sort of a couple of seasons' time. Because I don't think he's going anywhere this year. But in a couple of scenes time, perhaps. But the only stumbling block that I had when we got all conspiratorial about it was the fact that by the time that happens, we'll likely be sponsored by Nike, and he's obviously one of the biggest faces at Adidas, and that sponsorship world has a lot more sway in those types of things than you often give it credit for. I think that's something that maybe not a stumbling block in terms of what we'd want, but maybe on a commercial revenue, the amount of extra money that our sponsors may be willing to give us on top for having one of their biggest endorsements in that shirt would be a bit different. But as I say, that's a pipe dream for another time.
When does the new shirt deal get announced? Must be soon.
Who knows?
Under Armour have got another year.
No, but I mean, we'll presumably announce it before the end of
next season.
Before the end of next season. I wonder what. It's just a wondering.
Ignore Under Armour are a massive up and coming company, though. They've
just gone to Southampton as well.
They're the second biggest brand in the state in terms of sporting brands.
Well, they've got all the champions at the moment, haven't they? They've got they've got Steph Curry in the NBA. They've got Jordan Spieth in golf. They've been doing everyone.
Andy Murray actually as well. So
yeah,
they signed him to an agreement.
So they're doing very well, and they're blowing up. So it might not be a bad place to stay, really. Especially with the NFL tie-in and stuff. They've got what's his name, Cam Newton as well. The quarterback. So if they want to, what do you call it, draft him in for London Hotspurs or whatever they're going to be called in the NFL in a couple of years' time, then
I don't know if that'll happen.
The London Lions,
something like that. Yeah, that'll happen. I mean, that's an inevitability as far as I'm concerned. But yeah,
I quite like it if they reinvigorate the Monarchs. That was the old team.
That was quite fun, wasn't it?
Like, yeah, it was. Well,
London Monarchs.
God, that was weird, wasn't it?
Funny though, we were ahead of the curve on the old NFL thing. If anyone tries to give us any shit about it this time, to be honest, I'm probably going to be one of the people giving us shit about NFL Titan. But fuck the NFL grid, everyone. Christ.
Well, that's the whole reason they've changed the layout of the stadium and everything, isn't it?
Yeah,
with the big changing rooms and the pitch on wheels and shit like that. That's how they're paying for it and not sort of going into debt. Yeah. So there's pros and cons, obviously. You just gotta.
I'm just being a toss.
I don't think so, really. I mean, it is deeply uncomfortable the way that the club's sourcing their money and the deals that they're making. But I suppose you've got a grin and bear it. It's still better than maybe sort of being bought by people with awful human rights records or something like that, and spending a shitload and things like that. It's still
people that fund kind of like terrorist organisations or. Rob the mineral wealth of
nations. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so it's minorly better than that, we'll say. I'm not even sure you can say minorly. I don't think that's a word, but we'll use it now.
I'll have it that. Works.
I'll have that as a neologism.
I'd allow it in a game of Scrabble with you. It'd be okay.
I wouldn't. I'd get dictionary out if somebody tried to play that against me.
You definitely would as well.
Yeah, I'd throw my toys right out of the crowd.
Stephen Howes. At @idiot_wind_54 asks us, if we can win the league on the last game of the season, what set of circumstances would stop you watching it? I don't know.
Everything else can, well, maybe a death, possibly.
I actually think it's the 15th of May, isn't it? That's my granddad's birthday.
Christ.
Yeah, so it's either going to be.
He'll understand.
It's either going to be a very good.
Your dad's a Spurs fan as well, though. So
granddad on the other side. So my dad's a bit better than that now. My dad plays the game with the family much better than I do. I'm the one that's more likely to sort of fall out with everyone and take myself off to a television, whereas my dad will sort of sneakily keep an eye on the score and you know tap us and stuff if something's happening. But I'm the one that sort of, you know. Makes the trade-ins that you probably shouldn't. But, you know, I imagine I'll be able to sit with my laptop on my knee as long as we're not out of the house or something like that. But we'll see. I think it may well come down to the last game of the season, really. The thing that I do hope is that, and it's not looking this way, is that Newcastle's fate is sorted before then. But they've suddenly realised that they're in trouble and have started playing a bit better. So we're... We'll see. I mean, it's almost a dream scenario for the broadcasters, isn't it? Can you imagine billing that Newcastle win to stay in the league, Tottenham win to win the title? It's
mate, they'll probably still just a pointless Man United game.
Sky will be stitching together the montage now.
I think it will take till the final day to seal it, but I think overall. Going to win the league comfortably. I
think relegation is going to be sorted by the end of the last day as well.
Margin.
I said to you two the other day in a text though that I quite fancied winning it on goal difference, just to sort of rub in the fact that we have been so much better than anybody else. The fact that our goal difference is astronomically high it's ever been. I mean, I don't think I can remember the amount of times that we've finished with a positive goal difference, and even then it's sort of in single figures. The fact that it's 39 of them
goals superior to any other team in the league.
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. Best defence, best attack. It is the complete and utter opposite of what you're usually used to from this club historically. And you know, you can talk about fairy tales at other places all you want, but this is just as unprecedented.
We have scored more goals than any other team and conceded less.
Harry Kane scored more goals than Aston Villa. Yeah. Like, that's just insane. Christ, yeah. What a miserable end for that club. Jesus.
They're going back to back. They're going down to League One next year.
Yeah, I agree with you on
wouldn't
that,
Raj.
Wouldn't
be surprised, would
yeah,
you?
Right. You made that point earlier, didn't you?
Let's have a look. Pusha T at... we didn't really answer Stephen's question. We'll set a second. It would be something horrible, Stephen, to be honest. I don't really want to speculate, but it would be something terrible. It would be something truly, truly awful. Come rain or shine, I think I can speak for all of us and say we'll be watching that game. So, coming to Spurs. Pusha T at _Simmons_ asks us, do you think Dele and Eric go on double dates together?
I don't think they invite the girlfriends. They definitely go on sort of day trips together, don't they? And, you know, cinema, joint middle of day. They've got no better to do after training, FIFA for hours and then round each other houses. It's almost like a big weird little... Days. It's a very platonic brotherly love that they have. I don't think there's any...
Mate,
sort
I love
of,
it.
I love
yeah,
it.
It's so I mean, sweet, it's absolutely fantastic. I mean, there's no sort of, I don't think there's any homoeroticism about it, although I wouldn't have any issue with that because they're both very handsome men. But it's, you know, it's just
we're
nice to see because
that.
Yeah, and there's no real, I mean, Kevin
so.
Wimmer's
I mean,
a bit.
You've got to be quite good looking to get a place in this team. It's, yeah,
Kevin Wimmer, he's the only one that I'd sort of
Wimmer's
cast
a handsome
on.
Man. No,
he's not. He's got really. He's got a weirdly chubby face. I don't. I'm not a fan.
He looks a bit like a salami, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He's got a bit of got a touch of the David Cameron's about him. I think.
Wow, that's say. Cold. Okay.
He just has a very heavy face.
By the way, before the game on Monday, Wimmer was out signing. I really took the time to sign autographs for kids before the warm up started. So that's always good to see.
Did you go elbow him out of the way and get your stomach signed?
Yeah, I was going to say.
no, my face. Sign my forehead. no, but it's nice to see, and people should know that our players do things like that, I think.
What do you mean you're signing them for children? I'm the Premier League owl.
I'm only 31.
you know who I am. I'll write a scathing article about you.
Yeah.
That wasn't like me.
Don't use that brand on the pod, mate. We've talked about
it. Oh, Christ, yeah, I'm not allowed. I remember, yeah, sorry.
Dead, it's over.
Don't speak ill of the dead.
That, exactly, let it rest.
I love the owl, bring him back.
No, he's gone.
Did you design, out of interest, I've always wanted to know, did you design that picture?
It's clip art.
No, I thieved it off Google Images and then it ran it through Photoshop a couple of times.
Okay.
So I fucked about with it, but I didn't design it.
I quite miss him. Did you ever consider getting T-shirts made or anything?
No, I didn't go. No, I won't finish that sentence. Okay. Take a shot there.
Let's.
he's got business cards made up that he gives to lasses on the end of a night out, saying you've just had a hoot with a Premier League owl.
no, mate, it doesn't even have any words on it. It's just the owl, but one of its eyes is winking. That's the only thing on the business card.
With an
on the other side,
aubergine emoji. if we win the league, Seb, can you please get a tattoo of the aubergine emoji?
No, obviously not.
Just somewhere discreet. You've got plenty of tattoos, so you'll
I've
get.
I've got far too many already, mate. No.
I have actually committed to, lads. By the way, I have committed to a Tottenham tattoo if we win the league.
Is it Clinton and G on your back?
No, I'll probably get a little Tottenham crest somewhere, and I'm
happy
against tattoos, and I'm quite against especially football tattoos. Sorry, maybe I'm a snob or something.
What happened to Clinton and G on your back?
Timothy Atuba, wasn't it?
No, you texted me the other day, drunk, and you said that you wanted. We best not talk about our drunk interactions.
That
Let
is
me
a
in hot water.
You do not want to pull out, Raj, I think.
You said to me that you told your lass that you wanted Clinton and G's face doing the size of your back.
I'll do the crest on my shoulder. I haven't got anything on my upper arm, so I'm happy to do that. But yeah, maybe I have to tweak it a little bit. No, Clinton, I'm afraid.
I was saying the other day. I'll get Coys across one set of knuckles and FOYG across the other. That'd be quite good. Put your hands together and then
fully Spurs that. Huge Spurs points.
Get me some numbers.
Club should actually reward that with loyalty points, I think. you know, actually make you ticket eligible for certain games if you have that tattoo.
You can fit THFC 1516 across your knuckles, can't you?
You get White Hart Lane on your chest as well, like the actual...
the water ground. not
a really accurate and kind of...
Detailed,
yeah, tattoo of White Hart Lane.
Just the blueprint's like you're in Prison Break.
Yeah. I'm going to interpret this. So we've had one from our favourite Twitter handle named Chap, Sam Jones at Jamscons 95. Yeah, you love that one, don't you, Raj?
Just makes
I love
me laugh.
How much it tickles
it
you.
Just
you
makes
love
me
it.
Laugh. It's just, you know, it's,
it is good.
It's that. It's that. It's where it's not too clever, but it's just clever enough to make it funny.
It's all right. He says, Game of Thrones is back this week. And then the rest of the question says, who in the Spurs squad could with the Game of Thrones? But I'm assuming I'm going to interpret this as who in the Spurs squad could be in Game of Thrones, or what characters are who in Game of Thrones.
Right, Hugo Lloris is a snidey Littlefinger motherfucker. He's he's got his arms behind his back making little snidey deals, kicking women out of sky wells and shit. He's the one that you've got to keep an eye on.
Do you think?
Yeah, I think there's a ruthlessness about Hugo Lloris that you don't see. He'll smile in your face and then organise your death behind your back.
Hugo to me is a classic Stark. He's a Stark, like he's heart and he's passionate.
No, that's Eric Dyer.
No, I don't see Dyer as a Stark. I think Hugo is classic Stark. I think Harry Kane is Kane's not a Stark.
Harry Kane is Reek.
Dyer.
Fazio's Hodor.
Yeah, he fucking is as well.
Fazio.
Yeah, Dele Alli's a kid that he carries around.
Sherwood is a white
Joffrey. I don't think we've got a Joffrey. Maybe
Eric Lamella.
Dele Alli's a bit of a Joffrey.
No, Eric Lamella's Joffrey. He's got that. He's got that same snidiness about him.
Have we got a Jon Snow? Oh, no, yeah. I think Harry Kane's more of a Jon Snow, mate. I think he's the marginalized hero that steps up when kind of, you know, cast into doubt. He's the bastard. He's the one that's on the periphery, and actually, he's the one that steps into the limelight. And
I'd have Danny Rose personally as my Jon Snow. He's got the accent for it, yeah. Jon Snow from Doncaster, all day long.
I think Eric Dyer's our mountain.
Yeah.
I'm quite excited about the mountain coming back to life in the new series.
As a zombie.
Yeah, that's quite cool.
Some weird zombie stroke Bane type thing, isn't it?
Mountain?
What was that noise?
That was my...
Was that Cersei?
That was me. Let's just move on.
Talk to us like a lady again, sir. No. I quite like that. No. I've got funny tingles in places I shouldn't.
I was trying to go Jack into his Bane impression, but it didn't work. So.
I can't really think of too many more examples. Christian Eriksen's kind of one of those.
He's a boy king, Eriksen. He looks like a Lannister.
Yeah, he is. He is a bit of Tommen, isn't he?
Yeah.
Pure of heart.
Yeah.
Good.
He's really giggly, Christian Eriksen. I really like him. I think he might have one of the best senses of humour in the Tottenham squad. I'll never forget when that interview he gave about Tim Sherwood, where he just went, "Yeah, he's really good," and you could just see with it bigger on his face, he was just thinking, "You saw right through it," and he's just going without saying a word. He's just going, "Yeah, I think the bloke's an absolute bell end." He couldn't have, he's one of those where you can imagine him sort of getting all the sarcastic jokes out and sort of taking the piss out of the thicker players without him even knowing.
Well, can you imagine a player that's come from he's a product of one of the finest youth academies in the history of football.
And then he has to sit and talk to Kyle Walker.
But to hear a tosser like Tim Sherwood talking about how he's this great at working with young players, maverick. Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like, you've come from the Arts Academy and you see that bloke and you think, like, yeah, all right, mate, nice one. Yeah, you definitely know how to coach young superstars. Maybe I mean, by all accounts, Tim Sherr did do a lot for the academy, but I still just don't like to buy into it. So fuck him.
Nabil Bentaleb could be Grey Worm.
Yeah,
because it looks slightly similar and have that same buzz cut.
Mm. Personality, what about, maybe.
What's his
quite.
Name? Yeah, the imp. What's his name? Tyrion.
We don't really have a Tyrion.
Who's Moussa Dembélé? Moussa Dembélé. Surely there's a character for Moussa Dembélé.
Someone who doesn't speak and just, you know, fuck shit up all the time.
Oh, I'll tell he's you what, that guy that looks after Tyrion that night. The one that rescues him from the trial by combat in that big castle with the thing in the floor.
What, Robson from Robson and Jerome?
Yeah.
Oh, is it Jerome?
Whichever one, I don't know. Ant or Deck, I'm not sure.
It's Jerome, isn't it? No, is it? I can't remember. Robson... It's definitely one of...
Either at no cure for being a cunt.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's just...
One of them. The other one's got a fishing program. The other one's in Game of Thrones, so you know which one's had a better career since.
Yeah, right.
He's actually, Robson or Jerome, he's actually with Cersei in real life.
Really?
Oh, really?
Apparently so. Interesting. And so
she seems quality in real life as well. Have you ever seen her in interviews and stuff?
Yeah, apparently she's got no money whatsoever. She lives in like a really modest, like two bed house because she went through a really messy divorce and lost the majority of her money. So she lives in like a really normal house in America because she lost most of what she had in a divorce settlement. Apparently, I'm sure she sort of made it back and 10 times that since. But I remember seeing like an article about how sort of she lived a very modest lifestyle just because this failed relationship had sort of had hit her so hardly. But it's it just goes to show that, you know, Cersei isn't that way in real life.
It's funny that, isn't it? I always just find it bizarre when you'd hear about when before kind of there's this big influx of American TV and things like EastEnders, Coronation Street were a bit more relevant to UK viewers because it's all they had to watch. And you remember there were like those big silly, it might be a bit before your time actually, Raj, but I'm sure you remember, I was never really a viewer of it, Seb, but you remember all those big like storylines of like Little Mo and Trevor and all.
Mate,
that kind
Trevor,
of
Trevor's yeah. what Trevor was most. Yeah, goodness me.
Well, but he would talk about how he'd get blokes starting on him in
because
the street, like fronting up to him because he's Trevor. You like to hit women, do you, mate? And him having to actually explain to people, I'm an actor, you fucking moron.
Yeah,
I'm an actor. That's a character. That's not actually me. And but not to that extent. Yeah, you're not going to like spit at the woman that plays Cersei in the street, but you can't help but think, I don't trust her.
There was that.
I actually like Cersei as a character. You know this.
Cersei's a great character.
She's brilliant. Yeah. Everyone's like, I hope she dies. I hope she gets killed off.
She's brilliant.
Why? She's so good for the series.
She's
like,
so nasty.
The stories of that. I don't watch EastEnders because why would you ever put yourself through that misery? It's genuinely one of the most appalling pieces of television I've ever had to sit through, and I've only done EastEnders. It sort of a handful of times. An absolute joke. You've switched to Emmerdale. what do you call it? There was that storyline where somebody's nicked a baby in EastEnders, and I'm sure I'm not giving it the respect it deserves because it's probably a fine piece of writing. But some lass nicked a baby on EastEnders, and people sort of stopped being nice to her in the street and things because they couldn't remove her from her character because they thought she'd actually robbed a baby. And it was the BBC had to like apologise for the storyline and shit. It was fact that I'd heard about it and I didn't even watch the programme sort of showed you how big it had gotten. But yeah, it's very strange. Is there anyone that you've never been able to forgive from like a TV programme or something? Someone that you sort of cast aspersions on because of what they've done on television?
John Terry.
No, nothing for talking about. Yeah. John Terry's a good one. I was so Christ, what's his name? In the actual last series of Game of Thrones, while we're on that topic, the lad that fucking burns his daughter alive.
Oh my god! Yeah.
Sorry for spoilers, but I don't really care.
Well, you should have watched it by now. It's your own fault.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, your own fault. What's his name?
Stannis.
Stannis. That that actually made me quite angry watching that, seeing what he'd done. His own, like, his hubris had led him to that point.
Yeah. The Red Woman.
Yeah. So that made me quite angry. But other than that, no, I can't think about it. Why does anything spring to mind for you, Raj?
No, I was just thinking, and like sometimes it's like when you see somebody in a thing and you go, oh, there's that guy from that thing, and you sort of remember him from something else or something like that. You don't ever sort of forget them, or you call them by their other character's name or something like that if you're overly attached to them from one thing to the next. Then I think I do that, where if I've seen them in something that I've enjoyed and then they crop up in something else, I can never sort of, like, Idris Elba's Luther to me, because I've never sort of watched The Wire, so whatever it
is. See, that's weird, yeah. To me, Idris is always String a Bell. Yeah. Like, that's it, mate, String a Bell, yeah.
That is, but, I wish the Bond casters could watch an episode of The Wire, mate.
I can't watch anything with, what's his name, the guy who voices Scar from The Lion King, because Jeremy Irons, just because all I hear is Scar.
I know that your powers of retention.
Yeah, that's the one. And he crops up in, Die Hard with a Vengeance in the third one, Simon Says. And it's just like, why is Scar on the walkie-talkie to Bruce Willis for? But yeah, Bruce Willis, another one that is just John McClane.
Yeah, he is, isn't he? Yeah. Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Although Seb remembers him from Moonlighting.
We nearly got through an entire pod without one of those. Snuck it in right at the end.
You gotta do it. All right, should we?
Somebody's just called bingo at home.
Let's see it off there, lads. Been a good show, I think.
Yeah,
been a good show. Been a fun one. If you do want to listen to any, we did actually talk about it. I think we owed our avid fan base
our supporter.
If you do want to listen to any previous episodes of Rotherish Podcast, you can do so on Acast or on iTunes. You can do so at rtrpod.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at @rtr_pod. Do it, listen to us, give us an ego boost, write some iTunes reviews, do all that. Nice one. Come on, you Spurs, we're going to win the league.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.